Spirit Radio.
Ever beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond. Well, here we are. It's the 25th of December, 2011. Some people have different names for this day. I've started calling it the New Solar Year Day, for that's what it is. It's the day that the sun finally starts to move south from its northward position, having been there for 3 days, still, as if it was dead. The sun rises for the first day in a more southerly position. It's starting to move south. And that's why we celebrate a nice day here. Because we know that the sun's coming back and the days are going to get longer. I know that's the solstice. The solstice is the point when it stops. And today is the point when it starts again. What's very interesting about today, in particular, this year, is that it was also the day that the moon conjuncts with the sun, and that day we call the new moon. So today there's a new sun and a new moon. How very interesting. Now, oh, I look behind me, and I've had some awful computer problems this afternoon, and the computer that I normally use for Skype and things like that decided to completely die on me. But being an IT guy, that's not the sort of thing that would beat me. So I took a backup, and I've just tried to restore the backup. Let's see what happens when I restore the backup. If we can, we might hear it on the ding, 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 as I come back here. So it's been, as I've said before, as I said last week, 2011 was the year of, wow, I didn't see that coming. There's so many things that happened this year that were out of the blue. Oh, talking of out of the blue, I have a green screen and it doesn't like it. Oh dear. Well, so that doesn't look like I'm gonna have a booted up system, and so it doesn't look like I'm going to have any Skype callers tonight. I do have the chat room, and so good evening, Chris. I can do a personal show for you. What would you like me to talk about? I got loads of stuff to talk about. So, what would you like me to talk about? And I'll give you a personal workshop on it. My areas of expertise are the seven rays, musical notes, frequencies, colors, chords, how to play the guitar. God, I should teach guitar. Can you teach? Is it possible to teach guitar over the radio? I might have to appear on a camera. So, but where I started was the cycle. Today, the cycle has started. It's like it's a reset point. It's a point where everything starts and everything stops and everything starts. And I don't know if anybody else has felt this in the last few weeks, but certainly it's something that I and quite a few of my friends have been feeling, which is a sense of absolutely having the last bit of whatever it is squeezed out of you, whether it's patience, love, tolerance, whatever it is. It's been a few months, I'd say, culminating in the last couple of weeks. And oh, that's right. Did that? Yes. Okay, I'll stop doing that. I was typing into the chat room. There we go. And so so well, yeah. So it felt like everything had been squeezed out of me. And certainly out of a lot of other people I knew. You know, if we were kind of patient people, it would have stretched even our patience. You know, the patience, like I say, the patience of a saint. So there's been a lot of that recently, and then there was this big Mercury retrograde and this Pluto thing, and so there's this Pluto energy that's coming up, which is deep, dark stuff coming up from the basements. And all this energy, this is the same as the outing of the Illuminati. You know, 15 years ago, anybody who used that word must have read that book by Robert Anton Wilson. Nobody else has heard of it. And it seemed to have very little relevance to, you know, what we've been learning. Maybe I ought to read it again. It certainly made me paranoid the first time. Anyway, now we, you know, everybody seems to know who the Illuminati are, and they're not the top of the food chain, and they've been cut off from the top and from the bottom, and everything's in a bad way for them. And, you know, 15, 20 years ago, people would have thought this was some kind of strange science fiction kind of film that we're living in. So we're actually living in these future times. It's a bit like it's not quite Blade Runner, because we don't have the robots yet. Well, actually we do, but they're not in that sort of it's not that sort of dystopia. It does look like the whole Illuminati New World Order will kind of fall into place, but being a crazy plan by a bunch of crazy people, they probably thought about all the preparation for getting there. But what happens once it's all in place? Who's in charge? And their main problem is arrogance and egotism, and who's in charge? Exactly, you know, exactly that question. Who is in charge? And it's so interesting to think beyond that. Let's just consider, you know, all these crazy people that we've been watching, you know, the Rumsfeld, the Kissingers, and all that. What happens once the New World Order is installed? What do they do? Are they kind of going to do day-to-day management, or are they going to kind of leave it up to some vassal while they hang out on their boat or have their parties on their floating platform somewhere? Who knows what's going to happen with them? And we may find that the whole thing just kind of falls apart. It just because, you know, they've spent all these thousands of years, hundreds of years, dozens of years, whoever they are, creating this thing, setting it all up. And it's a bit like, you know, I've seen it before. You know, you have young women who have this huge belief about, you know, oh, my wedding day, and what a wonderful wedding day I'm going to have, and all this stuff. And they have their wedding day, and then they have to deal with marriage, which is a whole other business. And it's completely different from the engagement and the boyfriendness. So I have a feeling that, yes, what we are fearing may well manifest. but it's not going to manifest for long because it will literally implode upon itself. It'll fall in because, you know, these guys don't like working together. They don't like each other. They are scared of each other. It's all driven by fear. It's all driven by betrayal. As they say, betrayal is the first rule. And when they have that, it means you can't trust anybody. So who are you going to let run the world for you? No one. You're going to have to do it yourself. So that must be quite a strain to live with. And certainly if you've been putting all these things into place, slowly putting pieces on the chessboard, what happens when the game actually starts? Or, as we see, we're at the end of the game. I'll be very interested to see how long it lasts. Could be a matter of, like, 6 or 7 months. It may be a little longer, but it's not going to be very long at all. And so I'm very interested to see what's going to happen. So let's have a quick look at the chat room here. Talk about water and its importance. And K-Puppy, hello K-Puppy. I think a planet went direct on the 24th, though I forget which one. That was Mercury, yes. Thankfully, Mercury went direct. It's been retrograde for a long time. Well, not for a long time, it's about 3 weeks. It felt like forever. It was a very, very difficult period. I mean, as an IT guy, I can really confirm that Mercury retrograde does have an effect on machines. You know, I spent several years in a university, and I found out about Mercury retrograde from one of my flatmates or something when I was living in London, and they told me, you know, machines go wrong and communications go wrong, and I'm like, yeah, right. Because I used to be very, very skeptical back in the day, and you know, nothing beyond what I was looking at was any real. So it was very interesting to find out that there were periods of time when I would get more service calls, computers would go more wrong than they normally did. You know, and of course, the other thing that I found out was that there were certain people who would make them go wrong, and they would be very, very usually twitchy, fussy sort of people who would forever be sending out thoughts in all sorts of directions, and I think that certainly has an effect on the tiny little silicon crystals that exist within your computers. It may also be the new moon. It's yes, today is a new moon and a new sun. As I was explaining at the beginning of the program, it was it's the first day that the sun starts to move southwards, and so that's known as the beginning of the solar year. So why we have New Year's Day? I mean, why the 1st of January is then and not now? I don't know. Because that's where it should be. And then, because I live in northern Scotland, and there was a tribe, they're kind of more integrated now, but they live in this place where, interestingly, I was this afternoon where my ex-wife lives. And this place is called Burghead, and they celebrate the Julian New Year. And they do this by taking this barrel full of tar on a stick, and they're all wearing leathers and sou'westers and everything, and this barrel full of tar is on fire, and they run through the streets with this barrel on top of their, on, you know, like a big kind of plasterer's hod, on a long stick with all these staves that are made from barrels. They make whiskey here. Oh, I wonder how long that's going to take to crash. So they celebrate the Julian New Year in a very, very kind of Viking kind of way, because it was a Viking settlement, and there's lots of fire, and there's tar, and it's absolutely spectacular. It's really primal and raw, and it's a wonderful experience. And it's usually the wind is like, there's like, you know, there have been years where we've had horizontal snow and horizontal rain, certainly, and some very high winds as well, just without the rain or snow, which makes it all the more exciting. And they have this little hill. They drag the barrel up all the way to the end of the street, which is right on the coast. So it's bang then on the coast, and they take it up this little hill, and throw more. They got a stone structure that they slot the stick into, and then they throw more and more paraffin and oil and tar onto this thing. And the idea is that they set fire to it enough so that the stick that is holding up burns away, and the barrel then rolls down the hill. And at that point, everybody rushes to grab a piece of the barrel. A piece of the wood which is considered lucky, and this is called the burning of the clavy. The clavy, and it happens only in this place on the Julian New Year, which is the 10th of January. So, where was I going with all this? Well, we were talking about calendars and Januaries, and why isn't the 1st of January today? Because that's what it is, that's what it should be. In the same way that a new moon, the moon goes dark for 3 days, and the first time, the first slip, that's the new moon. So today is the first day that the sun starts to get warm again. So this is the equivalent. So happy new sun, happy new moon. And it's all been kind of garbled together. Now, I don't know if the words in Latin are the same. Is the word for Latin for sun and for sun, as in child and in star, local star, are they the same? I mean, does it work in other languages? I'm not entirely sure, but it certainly works in English. So maybe English is a language that can be used to convince people because it's got so many ambiguities in it. And so that's a very interesting thought, isn't it? That the language we use is deliberately created to confuse us. Yes. Interesting. So, you wanted me to talk about water. Water is very interesting. And I'm just going to have some, what is it? A carbonated beverage with vegetable extract. Sometimes you need it, especially after a Christmas meal, because there's lots of fats in it, and it's good for dissolving the, it's like cleaning the drains. Man, I don't know about everybody, but enforced feeding together can be quite a strain on the old digestive system, let me put it that way, let alone the Brussels sprouts. So, water. Dr. Emoto has various things to say about water. He would direct a word, a sound, a symbol into the water through the medium of the sun, which by the time it gets here is pretty coherent light. It's kind of like a laser's. And that vibration that was created by the symbol, yes, symbols create vibration. Symbols are vibration. They're like the Chladni images, cymatic drawings, of Dr. Hans Jenny, who put the sand and lycopodium powder onto a metal plate and would vibrate it at different frequencies, and it would come up with different shapes and symbols. And those symbols can also be used to represent frequencies because they're interchangeable. And in Roslyn Chapel in southern Scotland here, central Scotland, there is a group of stones which have these strange symbols written on them, and they're all in this sequence, and they go all up and down the archways of this church, and somebody actually went and catalogued them all and discovered what frequencies that they were supposed to be making, and they discovered that it was an old hymn, a Catholic hymn. Very strange. It would be interesting to put some water inside. Oh, hang on a second. System is running on low power. I don't understand that.
Maybe the cat has disturbed my plug. Oh, yes, that's better. That's better.
Haha. Yes, the cat had pulled the power plug out of the laptop. That could have been interesting. I insert the word love in my organite. What a good idea. Some people I've seen make a symbol of the Japanese or Chinese word for love, which would, you know, might be a pretty thing. But yes, you can use the word love. I've got some nice little heart-shaped organites. Maybe I should embed those. They may be a good idea. Embed these little hearts inside a larger piece. Good idea, K-Poppy. Yes. Yeah, Ms. Muggsy will be on at 6 p.m. her time, I believe. Or is it? I always get this wrong. It's going to be 2 o'clock my time. And it'll be, I think, 6 p.m. on Pacific Standard Time. So, yeah, inserting the word love in your organite certainly sounds like a good idea. And, yes, it is interesting to put water inside organite because you could create a pineal gland in there, couldn't you? If you have some charged up water and then you embed it into some crystal material, that would be a very interesting thing to do. Let me know how you get on. We could do a show about that. So back to water. So what we find is that when they try to figure out, when scientists or material scientists, let's call them, try to understand what's going on along with homeopathy, they discover that it doesn't work the same as allopathic medicine. It doesn't, you know, works on a completely different principle. And it's something that the allopathic medical community can't quite accept because the pharmacological companies stop them from understanding how things work in a real way. That's a big statement to make, I know. But it does seem that the universe appears to work more on a vibration level. Now, when I say vibration, that means any frequency. So a vibration can be as low frequency as, for instance, the orbit of the Earth around the Sun, which is one cycle a year. Or the rotation of the planet, which is 365 cycles a year. And it's always in terms of some kind of measure of time. And then, oh yeah, where do we get time from? What's that all about? And does time exist outside of our solar system? Could it be, as it has appeared to be coming out now, that the solar system is not a flat disk, that it's not even a flat disk spinning through space creating a helix, but it is more of a comet shape, that it's got a point at the top, which is the sun moving through space, cutting its path, and that we're in the vacuum of its wake. And it may not necessarily be that the wake that we're in, or the medium that we're passing through, is actually a vacuum. That's a very interesting thing to think about. It may be that the existence of this vacuum in our solar system is purely because of the movement of the sun, and we're sitting in its wake, which is a vacuum. Interesting thoughts. Thank you, K-Puppy. Ah, thank you very much. Yeah, I'm afraid.
Oh, dear. Oh, maybe. Hang on.
So I'm having trouble with my other computer. I would be able to take calls were it not for the fact that it's crashed 3 times today. And I'm trying to reinstall a partition on it. And it's just complaining to me. So, it's been a very interesting week where we're learning new things. You know, we think we know it all, we think we know the big picture, and then another bigger picture comes along. So this week, it's all about the gold. Turns out, everything's all about the gold. Every war, it's not about oil. It's about gold. It's about the bank that they have. All the rogue nations, they have their own gold. That's the thing. That's just it.
Oh, there's another...
Sorry, my just looking behind, I've now got a green screen of not very well. And it's going through another check disk. I don't think I've got a computer. For call-ins, I'm afraid. So you're just going to have to listen to my voice drone on and on and on. But where were we? We were talking about water. And yes, homeopathy appears to be the holding and taking of an impression. Not even the atoms of the element itself, but the impressions of the vibration of the element as it has existed in the water. So what's that like? How can we liken that? It's almost like the... No, I'm afraid not. It's almost like the sand... What do they call them? The Zen garden that you get in Japan... that they have a rock sitting in gravel, and the gravel is carefully raked so that it looks like the rock is sitting in water and that there are ripples that are emanating from the rock. And then if you were to take the rock away, then what you're left is with the waves. And I think that's the closest analogy I can get to about homeopathics. That's what's happening there. That there is so little of the element itself, almost none at all. But what you're left with is the impression of that element. And that's what does the healing. So... water is obviously, you know, we're made up mostly of water, but I think it's a mistake to think that water has no structure, that it's just it's kind of amorphous stuff. And even when you look up at the clouds, which are water, they seem to have a character. And you have the little fluffy clouds, and then you have the big heavy storm clouds, and then you got the nimbus and the cumulonimbus and the phone formations, the lenticular formations, you know, all of these different forms of water. And then you look at ice and you see ice crystals. What are ice crystals? Ice crystals are snowflakes. Each one is unique, but they've all got this hexagonal form. You know, what other material on this planet has billions of unique crystals? That their form is, you know, each crystal. I suppose all natural crystals are like that. I was just casting my mind over. The form of a natural crystal does vary according to where it grew up, what direction it's pointing. Factory made crystals tend to be a little more consistent with each other, which is why they like them to make radio objects. But water has this unique ability to store information, it appears. Like the Zen garden, where you put the rocks in, you make the ripples, and then you take the rocks away, and you're left with the ripples. When you freeze that, those ripples will have an effect, and that is what Dr. Emoto is measuring when he takes his ice crystals and he magnifies them and he gives them influences by putting some kind of vibration into it. You know, either putting, you know, he's put words like hate and all kinds of negative words, and put those words on the on the water, and when you freeze it, it's very ugly. There's no beauty in the crystals at all, and they're not formed in symmetrical ways. They're twisted and distorted, and it's just exactly the same energy as the words themselves. So it's interesting that because, you know, we're a large proportion of us water, that these droplets of water, however they may be in our bodies, will exhibit that same behavior, certainly, if not take on that particular structure. Doesn't water signify life and fire signify love? You could put it like that. Let's talk about states. I mean, because, again, all right, so let's talk about water. I think a lot about stuff like that. Thanks for asking me this, Chris. It is one of my kind of continual thoughts as I ponder through my day, you know, doing the washing or doing the cooking. Cooking is a wonderful alchemical process, and I really enjoy it. Anyway, so when you have your water... is able to, as we said, water is able to store information, as it is indeed what we call a liquid crystal, and the impressions that get trapped into the water are because of its liquid crystal nature. When you freeze it, therefore, you change it from one state, i.e. liquid, to another state, solid, and at that point it will exhibit its solid crystal structure, and as I said before, that's what Mr. Emoto is measuring when he's looking at these crystals. Let's go the other way. Add energy to water, to liquid water, and it becomes steam. So that's the third state, water vapor. And then, if you were to add plenty of energy into this system, the water becomes separated. The atoms go into their constituent parts, and it becomes hydrogen and oxygen. And, of course, we all know that hydrogen and oxygen are actually quite reactive together, and they would go boom. Or if there was no constriction, they would burn, and that's the what we call fire stage. So those are the four stages that correspond. The solid corresponds to earth, the liquid corresponds to water, the vapor corresponds to air, and the plasma corresponds to fire. And those are our four main, excuse me, Christmas dinner. Must say, those are our four main elements that we work with in the spiritual world. So yeah, there's lots of everything is life. Water is life, and the blood is the life. The blood is the soul. It might, you know, everybody's been considering for hundreds of years, you know, what's the seat of the soul? Where is the seat of the soul? Is it in the heart? Is it in the brain? Is it in the neck? You know, what part of your body houses the soul? And, you know, again, this materialist mind has been trying to dismantle the body to try and find where the soul is. Well, I think it's quite simple. There's a very ancient saying, the blood is the life. There's the clue. I think the soul is the blood, the bloodstream. And its purpose here, or our purpose, is to carry that blood. Coming round our veins, it's the blood that has the influence on us. It certainly feeds us. We die without it. It animates us. It carries oxygen to our muscles. Carries sugar to our cells. It transports waste away. Does everything. Does everything that the living being does. In fact, it's like civilization only happens near rivers. You know? So, the blood is a very, I think it's one of these, you know, deep esoteric truths that there's something about blood, and it's not just the stuff. It's not just the kind of red stuff that inconveniently leaks when you cut yourself. That it's a really important element, that it is the thing that animates us, that gives us life. So, water, yes, blood, yes, signifies life. Now, blood, again, I mean, it contains iron, you know, that's the earth, and then you have the water of the plasma of blood, and then you have your cells, which contain pockets of air and oxygen and things like that, and then you have the electrical parts of the cells, the electrical charge that they carry going from one place to another. So you again have you all four elements within the alchemy of the blood. Very interesting. Yes, very interesting subjects there, Chris. So let's again draw it back to water, and water signifying life and fire signifying love. Well, they say that, love is about warmth, isn't it? You don't find cold love. So perhaps you're right. Perhaps you're right. Who are you, Anon 2022? 2022? Wonder where you are. How I wonder where you are. Has everybody had an interesting day? Have you been with family? Have you been, taking time away from everybody, because it's a crazy time, and everybody else seems to be completely crazy at this time of year. Don't know about you, but it's very good to take a step back from it and realize what's going on. Our new friend Mary. Hello, Mary. Thank you for joining us. Excellent points. So, yes, water. Other ways of looking at water. Let's see. Well, like I say, with water vapor, water's got interesting properties as well. I mean, it's one of the very few elements of this or compounds on this planet that expands when it freezes and it expands when it heats as well. That's an odd one. And then, of course, once you've heated it above 100 degrees centigrade, you then get steam. Which is, again, it's very interesting stuff, because it will just kind of hang there up in the sky at some sort of level and take on all these weird forms. You know, clouds are really weird. I mean, I live in Scotland, which has this amazing sky always, and it has all these different forms of clouds. And clouds, they're really weird. I don't know if you ever thought about it, but like, why are clouds the shape they are? What is it that makes those clouds go fluffy or go long and flat and all of this stuff? And then, of course, we have to think, you know, what vibrations exist in our atmosphere? Up there, very low notes, but they are notes, whatever, because you can see that they, the clouds are the result of a wave. And again, it's like this, there is something there that is leaving evidence, like the Zen garden, but without the rocks. There's something there that is leaving the evidence, and it's written in the clouds, that there is sound moving through the earth, moving across, not through the earth, but across the earth, across the surface of the atmosphere, which at certain levels, you know, is actually quite dense and hard, and certainly as you fall through it, you get hotter and hotter through the friction. Things burn up. Oh yeah, talking about burning up, did anyone see the comet? If you look on some of the space weather sites, you can see this very spectacular comet that seemed to fly towards the sun and then incredibly rapidly come back out the other side. And nicely enough, this comet was called Lovejoy. I like that. So Comet Lovejoy has zipped off from one side of the planet, of the sun, and come up the other way, and it's really, really tight angle. And very quick, if you look at the film of it, you can see it goes in and it seems to come out almost before it got there. You know, something strange went on there. Anyway, so that's Comet Lovejoy, and it's got a lovely big tail, and people in Australia can see it just after dawn. You were just thinking about clouds. Yes. That, what you mean, that the iron filings, Chris, are like a, like the magnetic fields. Yeah, well, I think that a magnetic field is the same sort of thing. It's like a standing wave. I don't know if anybody knows what a standing wave is. Let's see if I can, explain it. It's when you have, you can take a pool, you take a little pool, and you tap your finger into a rhythm. Eventually, the ripples that come out from your finger will hit the side of the pool, and then they'll come back. And if you get the frequency, if you get the rhythm, the tempo, just right, you can make the ripples come back to you exactly at the same place where you're coming out from. And it will appear to be a stationary pattern, that the pattern will seem to freeze if you just get the exact frequency right. And it's possible. This is a bit of a thought experiment, but it is possible to do that. And the thing that you're setting up is what's known as a standing wave, or a stationary wave. You can notice that when you have, for instance, maybe you've got a kettle with a very, very high-pitched whistle on it, and you walk across the room, and you can hear it, and then you can't hear it, and then you can hear it, and then you can't hear it, and then you can hear it, and then you can't hear it. The pattern that we're talking about, that is what we call a standing wave. And what we seem to be talking about in terms of our existence is a standing wave. So we are like clouds being formed by some frequency somewhere. So, hang on, things are going in the chat room. What's this? John Valor's interview with Alfred Weber. Which one? The blue cosmic... Oh, right. There was a very, very interesting article about the blue kachina, and that was with a man who's only known as Tolek, and he says he represents the Andromedan Council on Earth. And he was talking about the blue cosmic object, and he described that as what we called Comet Holmes, which happened about 5 years ago, 3 to 5 years. I remember it very well. It was in the constellation of Perseus, or somewhere like that, Bootes, somewhere in that zone. If you look at Orion, and then you're looking face on, and you go off from Betelgeuse, which is the top left-hand shoulder from your perspective, and you go off that direction, that's where Comet Holmes was. And it just kind of went one day, and it made the biggest object ever to appear in the solar system. It was just huge, but it was like a foof. It was like a great big pom-pom in the galaxy, and stayed there for quite a time. And what Tolek was saying was that this was like a the male counterpart to the female egg from the center of the galaxy to the Earth, in order that it births the new Earth and it births the transformation of our beingness from whatever we are to wherever we're going to go. I don't like to put a label on it, because it's probably going to be wrong, because we're trying to label something that we have no experience of yet. Okay, so I can see Alfred Weber popping up in the chat room there. Very good. So yes, the blue cosmic object. That's what they said, and I think Melchizedek is along the same lines. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. Oh, yeah. What's going on? So the blue cosmic object. So yes, that's what they say is the blue kachina. And then they say just after the blue kachina, or following on after the blue kachina, is the red kachina, which they call the destroyer. Yes, the destroyer. That's not a very charming name, is it? That's something like, oh, we're going to be wiped off the face of the planet then. Maybe. I think the whole thing about all the Hopi prophecies is that they say those who stick to the old ways, or those who understand the old ways, will prevail, will survive. Build the new. And I think what they're talking about is people who are sensitive to the earth, people who are sensitive to others, people who are sensitive to the truth, people who trust their sensitivities. For instance, say we had some kind of psychic early warning system that was built into our bodies that would tell us when an earthquake was going to happen, and it exists as a sense of wanting to get the heck out of there. If we had that early warning system, then we would have a advantage over those who are not listening to those senses in their bodies.
And one of the things that the Hopi people said, is also that, I think, I can't remember, there's like a series of 9 prophecies, and I think this was the 8th or the 9th, is that they see lots and lots of people growing their hair and joining the native tribes. And I thought, that's a very interesting thing that they say. You know, what's the thing about hair? Because when I was young, I had this... I rode my motorbikes, and I had... Although I had male pattern baldness, I still grew the back of my hair long, and I liked it like that. And then I got married, and I, you know, all that kind of thing, and look nice, dear, look nice for the father-in-law, Brigadier. Yes, of course, sir, yes. And so we lost that hair, and it all went away. And in the last few years, it started earlier, I think earlier this year, is I started growing my hair. I thought, right, okay, I know I'm an old baldy, an old specky baldy, but I want to grow my hair. Have you got a problem with that? And I do find that I'm quite more sensitive, more telepathically sensitive nowadays. Now, I don't know whether that's part of the general atmosphere or whether this is just me because I'm growing my hair. And, yeah, I'd love some coffee and pie. I've got some mince pies downstairs, that might be, yeah, anyway. pie. Quick Homer moment there. So then I discovered that, and we published it on our article base, the Wisdom Base, on wolfspiritradio.com. I've created a little place where I can put some of these little stories. And one of these stories is the truth about hair. If you go to the Wisdom Base page, you can scroll down and see the article that is the truth about hair. And it turns out that in Vietnam, they in the 60s and 60s, they tried to recruit some Indian trackers, some Native American Indian trackers. I'm trying to get out of the habit of saying American Indian. Because to the First Nation people themselves, that's an insult, and so I would like to try and encourage myself and everybody to. They like to be. In fact, the best way of describing them is Turtle Islanders, because the island that is considered the government states, or what is it, what do they call them? The de facto state of Mexico, USA, and Canada is, they're all legal fictions. They don't really exist. What really exists is Turtle Island, and that's where you live, most of you. Yes, and I do believe hair growth increases our senses. Yes. Yes, what happens, what about the mohawk? Interesting. Yes, so what they found is that the trackers, when they had their military haircuts, they couldn't track anymore and couldn't sense danger, and all these amazing powers that they had was all due to the hair. And, you know, we've all heard the story of Samson as well. And so there's something about that. So I've been growing my hair, and I don't care. Maybe the more you grow your hair, the less you care. Who knows? So, so yes. And we find that, actually, yes, let me just, that's better. I had my hair tied back today. I find that's a terrible thing, you know, terrible thing, but, it's a subconscious tension to have my hair tied back, and it's quite nice to let it hang, to let your hair hang, to let it, what do they say, to let your hair down, they have all these different things, keep your hair on, let your hair down, Interesting. So, have I exhausted water? Have we mulled that one dry? Maybe. I think I ought to play a tune. That might do things. Let's see. What's a nice tune? Well, let's have these two. While My Guitar Gently Weeps and Across the Universe.
Endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my open mind, possessing and caressing me. Change my world. Nothing's writing and inviting me. Limitless, undying love which shines around me like a million suns and calls me on and on across the universe.
So, I love that song. That was the first song I ever performed on stage myself when I was 16, I think. So, yes, that gets me thinking about the Beatles. And, of course, some of the listeners of this show may be aware of the Paul McCartney conspiracy. Hands up in the chat room, who's not heard of the Paul McCartney conspiracy? It's a very interesting little subject. That it's one. I mean, on one level, it's well, you know, so what? There's a big so what about it, you know. I don't mind who Paul McCartney is, whether he's the real person or the fake person or. You know, he's a good musician. He's still playing music. He's still doing his thing. But it's interesting to note what has been going on behind it. And from what I understand, and there seems to be quite a lot of proof, and it does also answer a lot of the questions about some of the Beatles' mysteries. For instance, one of the Beatles' mysteries is, why was John Lennon killed? Another one was, why did they stop touring? Another one was, why did they break up? Many, many mysteries. Why was George Harrison attacked 20 years later? What is this all about? Well, I came across, it was my band. There was a guy in a band when I was 16, 17, and he always used to say that Paul McCartney was dead and he'd been replaced by a lookalike. And everybody was going, rubbish. But somebody a couple of years ago alerted me to this, and it reminded me of this fellow. And I suddenly started to take the idea a little more seriously, because then I started actually looking at the covers of Beatles albums, and I would recognize John, and I would recognize Ringo, and I would recognize George, and then I'd go, who's that? Oh, it's Paul. And that little gap between who's that and oh, it's Paul was a huge program. An enormous subroutine ran at that point. And if I can dismantle that subroutine, because it's quite a gap from not recognizing a person to remembering who they are. So first of all, there's the this lack of recognition. This is someone I don't know. On the other hand, it's like, oh, don't be silly. Everybody knows the Beatles are John, Paul, George, and Ringo. And we've had John, we've had George, we've had Ringo, so that must be Paul. And so the feedback comes back, you know, what are you doing, stupid? That's obviously Paul. You know, why are you doubting? You know, what? That's Paul. It's obvious it's Paul. You know, because there's John, there's George, and there's four of them. They're always together. And blah, blah, blah. And it, you know, this may seem to be a very, very trivial point, but that little, what's called a cognitive dissonance, that there's John, blah, 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 who's that? Oh, it's Paul. That little, who's that to, oh, it's Paul, is a big jump. And if you dismantle it, as I said, you get to this point when you're actually kind of doing yourself down for being stupid. That's what we call programming. We've been programmed. There has been a psychological operation that has been performed on us all. We've all been brainwashed. The person who you saw in Let It Be, the person who you saw singing Hey Jude, was not Paul McCartney. His name is William Campbell, and he won a Paul McCartney lookalike competition, and he was given plastic surgery by MI5, because the Beatles were considered to be Britain's number one flagship export, and it was very important in those days to save face, because they were having terrible trouble with the Russians. And so the Secret Services were assigned this case to recreate Paul McCartney. They had plenty of songs, and John Lennon was able to take on the songwriting and musical directorship, and Bill Campbell was hired as a musician to play Paul McCartney as a character. And he saw all the films, all the footage, learned the voice, learned the mannerisms. But if you look at him, and particularly, I think that the most telling is the tape of the rehearsals for Let It Be, when all the rest of the guys are sitting around rather dull and depressed, and he does his Paul McCartney thing. This, you know, the way he's in the early 60s, when he used to shake his head, and that's when all the girls would scream. And he did this little movement and a kind of expectant smile, saying, look how clever I am. Yes, I'm getting better all the time. And he kind of gave himself away there a bit, because he wasn't who he was pretending to be, and it was their friend. And in some ways, you can see this whole this thing play out as a very, very cruel kind of situation for the rest of them. It must have been really, really hard. And there's no wonder that they broke up. And you ask, you know, you see interviews with George Harrison, and they always say, oh, why did the Beatles break up? They, you know, always trying to slip it in, always trying to slip in the old golden question. Why did the Beatles break up? Was it because of money? And he said, and they always say, no, it's nothing like that. Of course, you know, they couldn't tell. They couldn't say, because they'd signed the Official Secrets Act. And the penalty at that time, and still happening, still there, is death for breaking that secret. And I'm going to even hazard a guess now as to that's why Jimi Hendrix died as well. Possibly Brian Jones, possibly Brian Epstein, their manager, who died shortly afterwards. So there, you know, there's a lot of death hanging on this question, and that's why you see Ringo will never make anything. He'll never say anything, because he's the only one left.
And he knew that Lennon tried to spill the beans, and that's what got him killed 2 weeks later. And Harrison, the last thing, 2 weeks before, he got stabbed by a deranged fan who suddenly appeared in his mansion. 2 weeks after he got stabbed, 2 weeks before he got stabbed, he called up Bill Fall, as he calls him, False Paul, and said that, you know, he was going to go public. And presumably, Fall spoke to Maxwell, or whoever his current handler was, because he's definitely still involved with them. And 2 weeks later, George Harrison was nearly offed. And this information comes from tapes that Harrison had asked his wife to bring in, go get me a dictaphone and a couple of tapes. And he recorded this last testament and gave it to a member of the Hare Krishna group, as far as I can see. The people he felt that he could entrust his knowledge safely with. And I believe that they acted duly, and 5 years later, this tape and tape recorder end up with an American production company, and they make this film out of it. And there's some, I think it's a quite well reproduced film. There's a couple of glaring American misunderstandings there. One of them is that the name Maxwell, as pronounced by a Liverpudlian, William Moxwell, and so they called him Moxwell, and not Maxwell. It's a subtlety, and not many people would have got it. And the other thing is that they used the London taxi instead of what we call the Black Mariah, which is the police van. But aside from those two real anorak points there. Yes, Ringo's facial expression tools for, I'm not finding the link at the moment. All right, yeah. So, yeah, so I imagine that everybody's listening to this is probably up to speed on this. On this thing that I've spoken about before, but I think it's a fascinating story, and I think it has a lot of repercussions about British rock music and who really controls it, and what else goes on. And we've spoken before. I spoke with Katie Galanti a few months ago. We were talking about the Satanist. Externalization of the Satanist ritual, and we found that in rock and roll and all of these other records, they're kind of the opposite of blessed. they're kind of cursed. Another of our listeners was even saying that in her youth, she could see these things coming out of the out of her dad's record collection, see these demons coming out of the record collection, which reminded me of things. Secrets of Santa. Oh, Santa, don't get me started. Who was it I read? The guy in red, who's, if you've been a bad boy, punishes you, and if you've been a good boy, you know, gives you a present. Guy in red, how was his name? Oh, yeah, Santa. Or is it Satan? That's one of them. Anyway, yeah, the whole, I mean, yeah, Christmas. This is where I started this evening. And I was talking about, you know, what do we do? What is this moment about? We're at the beginning of the new year. It's the new solar year. And it's the time when the sun has been up to the north and it's starting to come south again. And I'll keep repeating that because that's what it is. That's what today is. And all different cultures have given it different names, but that's where we are. And particularly today is a particularly new one because we've also got a new moon at the same time, which is, astrologically, it's a conjunction. And since it's conjoining on a particular area of space, not too far from the center of the galaxy itself, we may find some kind of galactic influence coming in today. So, I suppose where we're getting to is, what is our highest truth? What do we see as the most true thing? The ultimate question of what are we doing here? Well, we're carrying our blood around in our bodies. This blood is a magnetic fluid, and it forms us, and it, as a magnetic fluid, has an electric component and is an electromagnetic radiator of energy. Other people can feel us. We have an aura, and it's all emanating from the crackling energies of our bloodstream. How about that? So, anyway, just going to have a quick sip. 4:15. Well, where are we? Yes. Spirit Radio. That's good. Yeah, that's where we are. We're on Wolf Spirit Radio. Out in the forests. So, oh, there's so many there are so many threads that I could explore in this. Let's have a quick look at blood, right? Blood. I know some people, yeah, even my ex-wife, even just talking about the word blood, she feels faint. So I don't know how else I can put this. You know, blood is interesting. It's very interesting properties as a liquid. You know, it's seawater. It's about the consistency of seawater, isn't it? Or is it consistency of tears? I'm not sure. How salty is blood? It's got iron in it, and that iron carries oxygen, and it's also got glucose in it. Is it? What is the one? I can't remember if it's glucose. That's the one that feeds the cells anyway. And then obviously it carries away the carbon dioxide somehow, that then goes back out through the lungs and is breathed out and is filtered out and all these amazing things. And so there's the blood. That's the alive part of us. Everything else is kind of just structure and mechanics, mechanicals, hydraulics. So the blood is the real part of us. Yeah. Have I finished with fall? I found it very interesting in watching the documentary when they were talking about the Indian escapade, when they went over to the Maharaja and all that, and they were about to say Hare Krishna. And he said that the real reason that they went over there was so that they could find a way to inject Paul's soul into William's body. But he didn't know that at the time. Yeah, that was a plot that they'd hatched. I know. Let's try and get a guru to stick Paul's personality and soul into William's body. I'm wondering a little bit if they've used some mind control techniques on him so he actually believes he is who he thinks he is. Which would make it all the more difficult to kind of crack it open. But it's not within the bounds of... it's not too far outside of the bounds of possibility. What am I saying? It's not within the... It's within the bound. That's right. Sorry, I've backed into a verbal cul-de-sac there. It's within the bounds of possibility because we've had contact with people, Stuart Swerdlow, Dave Corso, Duncan O'Finian here on this show, who have been... let's say involved in mind control programs, and we know what hypnosis can do. Anybody who's read David Wilcock's latest book will know that you can even cause somebody to become invisible to another person if you hypnotize them. So invisible that you could read a watch face that was placed in front of them. That was placed behind the person. They tell the guy that this person, this female, was invisible to her, to him, and he couldn't see her at all. And he was standing there, and the hypnotist was standing behind the girl, holding a watch, and the man was able to read the face of the watch through the girl. Amazing as that is. I mean, are we in a hologram? What's going on when you can actually read the time on the watch? That you can read the time on the watch through the person who you've been told is invisible. I don't know how that works. I really don't know how that one works. So, we've been hypnotized. We're the subject of a psychological operation. And it's huge. It's so big. And it's been right in our faces. And they've been trying to tell us, all the covers of the albums, you know, all this stuff about, oh yeah, Paul's not wearing shoes on that one because he's the corpse. And, all that, look at Sergeant Pepper. Actually, yes, it's a grave. You know, it's a square, it's a rectangular piece of turf that's been cut out and freshly dug. And there are wreaths of flowers, and there's a wreath that looks like a bass guitar that also looks like the letters Paul. And all sorts of clues all over these albums. Paul is always looking in the opposite direction to everybody else. On Let It Be, everybody else was in white, and Paul had blood red behind him. The list goes on. If you look at all the Beatles albums, they all will be telling you a story. And it seems like that's from 1966 onwards. Something like September 1966. Fanta is the fake Fanta. Fanta is false Santa. That's very good. Meanwhile, we've been the subject of this enormous psychological operation. And what would it take? What is it going to take to actually heal this thing? You know, what's going to happen? You know, false Paul McCartney suddenly one day wakes up and realizes who he is. Or he gets a knock on the head and he realizes that he's not really Paul McCartney at all, and that he's been living Paul McCartney's life, but he's not been Paul McCartney all this time, and he's going to come out and say it. What's going to happen? How are people going to react? And then you think, well, sounds like there's a lot too much hassle, and they better not do it and just leave it as a mystery. Another one of life's great mysteries. Why did the Beatles break up? Is it really important? I don't know. It's stuff we hear. You listen to a Beatles tune and it takes you to a place. There's a magic to it. And that's more than just a metaphor. There is a magic to it. It's been subject of sorcery. Stay tuned to Katie Galante's conversations. We're going to talk more about that kind of thing as the year progresses. We have new shows. We're going to have some new shows from Stuart Swerdlow and from Tracy Kennedy and from Rebecca Jernigan and from Ms. Muggsy and Roger Silver and Dave Corso and Thomas Hughes. We're going to have some more Buffalo talk, which is fascinating. It's a simulcast we do on a Wednesday evening, and we're talking with some pucker, some real kosher
Native Turtle Island chiefs, nation chiefs, and these guys, they are so poor. You know, some of them don't have computers, they don't have the internet, that they join in on the telephone, and they live in this remote place, 2 hours from the walk from the nearest place where there's a computer, you know. So I was thinking how nice it would be to have a campaign to bring all the Turtle Island nations together with a satellite internet for every tribal chief. I think that would be a really nice vision to have. Anyway, so on Wednesday nights, and sometimes spilling over to Thursdays, and sometimes spilling over all weekend, we have a very interesting scenario that's ongoing with the Turtle Island people, because they're finding out that the reason that the Americans and British and Canadians and all this stuff are there is by virtue of a treaty, and the treaty turns out to be, you know, that they haven't fulfilled, you know, the British haven't really fulfilled their part of it, so they need to forfeit, and this might be quite an interesting time to see, as the chiefs get together, learn stuff, learn about what the laws were and how they were cheated. We're going to see some very, very interesting times coming up, and it may be that very soon some chiefs are going to come along to the government there in Washington and say, well, you've been on our country, you've been on our land for these hundreds of years, and apparently, according to this treaty, you owe us a rent, backdated, as it says here, in this treaty, backdated till then, with interest. And so that will be a very interesting time when this thing goes public, because when we find out that people have been arrogantly swaggering all over somebody else's land, things might change. The whole attitude would change, wouldn't it? And instead of being an apparent nuisance that they wanted to wipe out, they would be the richest landowners on the planet. Think about that. So that's a lovely view of what's going to be happening. I think when the Turtle Island people connect together, and it's not going to be very long from now, and these are the people that you've been waiting for, I believe. I really think that this is the moment, and these are the people, and, well, you're the people as well. We are the people we've been waiting for. And good luck to us. I think there's going to be some very interesting changes happening soon. Changes that have never been seen, that were not seen in our parents' generation. And when I look back on it, I think about my parents' generation, how so linked in with the big brainwashing things about the war, and how everybody has to be more austere because there's a war on, and all of this stuff, and how their mentality got transferred into my mentality, which makes me not want to throw things away because it might come in useful. And I don't know, maybe that's just me inherently, but it seems that my generation have got this kind of second generation after the war thing, not quite as austere. And I think we're going to feel the pinch of this austerity that's coming. I don't think my generation are really prepared for it. We've been living some very luxurious lives over the last 20 years, 30, 40 years. So, where do we go from here? The mystery. The McCartney mystery. The other mysteries. I'd like to explore some of the mysteries in the coming months. Because, I mean, from the perspective of looking at things from the rays means that you're looking at stuff from a perspective that is completely non-personal. It looks at things in terms of shapes and forms and patterns and energies and frequencies and things like that. It's very objective. And when you look at things with a very objective point of view, you have a good way of getting to the truth of any matter, getting to the heart of it. And I think that getting to the heart of any matter is the key to understanding it. I don't think you can understand it. It's like I don't think you can understand things by studying lists. I think you can only understand things if you get inside them, almost put them on like a suit, that you feel how your beingness moves through the understanding. Maybe I'm getting a bit abstract there. Meanwhile, oh dear, have you got any questions in the chat room? I know this is a very long delay on this particular streamer, and I have to talk for quite a long time before I see a response in the chat room. But yes, I'm open to suggestions about what to talk about. I know I can go on for a long time on all sorts of things, but I'd like to be able to serve you and understand, help you find stuff. It's Fanta the fake Santa, cola being Santa's drink. Yeah, interestingly, I've got, yeah, as I was saying, soft drink with vegetable extracts in a red can. Very sweet stuff. Used to be a medicine when it had cocaine in it. Not much of a medicine now. Stimulant. So, yes, Santa, Hallmark. Oh, I tell you, I'm really glad to be over Christmas. I have to say, it's not my favourite time of year. I don't know. I think it's the pressure of all the brainwashing involved in this particular time of year, and how it affects people. And although people say, "Oh, I really love Christmas," they always end up exhausted and not enlivened by it. What about Rick Clay and his ideas on the 2012 Olympics? What are his ideas? Alex,
welcome to Ever Beyond on Wolf
Radio. Don't do that. That's what happens when I press the enter key on my keyboard and I'm in the wrong window. Yeah, five words, I told you before. Five words sum up 2011. I didn't see that coming. And which five would... I think the 5 years which sum up 2012 is I have no idea, mate. And 2011 was I didn't see that coming. There were so many surprises this year. So many, who would have thought? Who'd have thought?
Now I come to think of it, I can't even think of one.
Well, we've had lots of earthquakes and lots of floods and lots of, you know, lots of disasters, natural, supposed, quote, natural disasters. But let's call them environmental disasters. And yeah, I'm glad. And we've had some revelatory times. We've had WikiLeaks popping out. We've also had Fukushima, and was it the Chilean earthquake this year? I think that was last year. It's all been a bit. It's all a bit of a blur, really. This year has been a complete blur. So many things have been going on. Used to be, you know, you'd have an earthquake and then there would be the mopping up operation, then there would be the charity gigs and everything in aid of da 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 da. There's no time for it. From one day, there's one environmental disaster, and the next day, there's another environmental disaster, and it just gets on, goes on and on and on until it's like a matter of hours between them. I have no idea about 2012 because it's going to be more of the same and probably even faster. I don't know how long this is going to speed up. I think it's going to get to a point when it will be a surreal experience because so much will be going on around you that nothing will appear to be real anymore. Everything will be plastic. You know the way that they're seeing the ground liquefying, you know, during earthquakes. You know, stuff that we thought was solid material will just, you just step into it and swallow you up. You know, things are not going to be as reliable as they used to be, I think. And I think really if there's any preparation to make is let go of all your preconceptions about the nature of reality, how you think it may, how you think it's made up, what behavior it exhibits, because I think it's all going to change this year. We're going to see things in the sky. I'm sure we're going to see things in the sky this year. Finally, after all these years, we're going to see stuff in the sky, because I think that's what we've all been waiting for, really. I watch the sky. I've been watching the sky for the last 10 years. I've been waiting. I know I'm waiting for something. And I know you are all waiting for something. And I think this something that we've been waiting for is right around the corner. I don't know if it's this week, this month, or this coming year, but we have now less than 12 months towards that fateful date, which probably nothing out of the ordinary by then will happen, because it will all have been happening. It will be just another out of the ordinary experience on the 21st of December 2012. And then what happens on the 25th of December when the sun starts to move south again, the new year? That's the interesting day. When's the new year? What's going to happen on the new year? In Scotland, they have quite a greater celebration of the New Year's Day, and they call that Hogmanay. I'll have to find out what that means. Hogmanay. Do they, you know, have a hog? I don't know. So we'll see what happens there. What five words? So yes, 2011, I didn't see that one coming. As I said, I can't think of any at this moment, but I remember thinking all through this year, wow, I didn't see that one coming. Yeah, I thought I had it down. So time flies like an arrow. We've got 20 minutes to go. Any more subjects that, what about Rick Clay? The ideas on the 2012 Olympics. Let's have a think about that. I've not seen all of Rick Clay's material. I understand that he was a whistleblower, British whistleblower, who was very young.
and I don't know whether he'd been involved in any of the programs, but I remember him being very young, and then he is now no longer alive. Whether he was encouraged along that path, or you know, did he fall, or was he pushed? I imagine that he was pushed. And his ideas on the 2012 Olympics. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that he's saying that that's when there's going to be a tremendously large false flag operation that may involve nuclear weapons. In which case, my sister would be right there at the epicenter, because she lives just around the corner from the Olympic Stadium. So I do hope that's not going to happen. That there's going to be either a nuclear explosion there, or that there's a false alien invasion where they hoover up hundreds of thousands of people who are all sitting in the stadium. Interestingly, there are very few tickets left for any of the events, and you know, people are buying very expensive tickets for some really stupid little stupid sports, you know. Sorry, I shouldn't be disrespectful. People take a lot of time to practice their sports, but you know, there are some that are kind of slightly obscure, you know, sort of female wrestling or something, I don't know. And even those tickets are going for hundreds of pounds, and it's the result of a lottery. So in my mind, you'd have to be crazy to be there. Just, but I think the world has gone crazy. I personally can't relate to football fans. I suppose you have the same thing with you have your American football, but you also have baseball, which is the one that people really get heated up over. You know, very tribal. In Britain, soccer, what you call soccer, is the tribal brew, and it's something that I've always kind of shied away from. I think it came from my first experience of playing football when I was very young kid, when I was sort of 6 or 7, and I played football in the field, and I kicked a ball so hard, and it was very short range, and the kid was in front of me, and it burst his nose, and you know, I kicked the ball and it flew up in his face, burst his nose, and there was blood everywhere, and I thought, I don't want to do this, I don't like this game, I don't want to get away from this. So I haven't really been much of a football person since then, and I really don't get, you know, why people get so emotional about it. It seems to be a distraction from being emotional about the real things that we need to be emotional about. And I suppose it's used as a cathartic distraction, that rather than being focused in the anger and intent, it's dissipated, and it's the dog and pony show is laid out as a substitute. So this year was really amazing for K-Puppy. That's good. Well, it has been an amazing year. I mean, one of the things that that positive in my life is this radio station, this radio program, this website. It's been quite a learning curve doing all these things. But 18 months ago, I hadn't. I had done some music DJing for a few years ago on the internet. And I did a few interviews, but to be as a station anchor, station master, looking after all the shows, making sure they all went out, making sure the transmitter's working all the time, doing all that stuff, creating a website, learning PHP and MySQL and all of these things that you need to know how to create a website, and how to make it work, and how to make it look funky, and and how to make players work and which ones work and which ones don't. So yeah, there's a lot of work that has gone on into creating this experience here. But I think we're now at a point where it's quite smooth. We've managed to understand how the software works and understand how to make the thing work. In just over an hour, we're going to have Sam Muggsy, and I think she's got Adronis on again. Brad is returning, from what I can understand. So she'll be on in about 75 minutes' time. Is that right? 75 minutes' time, just 15 seconds. Yeah. 75 minutes' time. Yes, biblical. Biblical proportions. Yes, yes, that's where I'm getting to. It's religion. It uses the same, it uses the same muscles as religion, and religion uses is a manipulated state of mind that is being replaced, yes, as you say, by football or some other form of fanaticism. But what they have to realize, these manipulators, is that the age of fanaticism is coming to an end and the age of truth is coming in. And that's the movement of the sixth ray to the seventh ray energies. After the beginning of the year, we'll be taking calls here. And thank you very much. Head dames. Right. Yes, except Ed Dames is still alive, I think. Yeah. But with football, you know, I just think of some old friends of mine who I hooked up with a few months ago when I went down to London, and which is where I was born, and met up with them, and how they're still completely obsessed by football as their means of escape on a daily basis, so they don't have to face the everyday realities of the fact that the people that they're working with are complete twats. So it's a it's, I suppose it's like alcohol, you know, when you have there's stories of elephants who kind of been hanging around in an orchard, and they've been eating the windfall apples that have fermented and become alcoholic. So that when they're in a captive situation, that they tend to go for these fermented fruit to make them drunk, so that they don't feel the pain of the fact that they're captured. And I think that's what we really need to get humanity into, is to feel the pain of the slavery that they're in, that we're in. Once that pain becomes acute enough, pain will take its natural course. The natural reason that we have pain is to move us away from whatever it is that's making that pain. If you're sitting on a pin, you don't improve the pain by sitting harder, further down, pressing yourself down. You get up off the pin. That's the purpose of the pain. You know, get away from this. So the hope that we have, and it's you know, this sounds it sounds a bit strange, but I think really the common humans, people in general, need to feel the pain of their captivity so acutely that they're ready to say, okay, that's enough. At that point, we can become sovereign. We can take responsibility for our lives. Oh gosh, yes. Helping the gypsies and homeless. Ah, the gypsies. You're listening to a man who has been evicted by gypsies. It's a long story, but yes, I was living in a caravan, a trailer once, and a bunch of gypsies bought the trailer park and evicted me. So, outcast by the outcasts, here I am, ever beyond. The football of chance, yes. It's madness. It is absolute craziness, the football thing. So, to answer the question, will I be able to take calls later on? I can't take calls tonight because, I'm looking at the computer behind me and its screen is green with white writing on it. It doesn't look very well. Yes, wouldn't it be nice if instead of paying... I mean, I don't know how much money a football ticket is, but I think it's quite a lot of money to actually, you know, just go to a stadium or even to buy a season ticket. It would cost hundreds of pounds. How much would it help? Would it cost to help the homeless in the area? Why doesn't the football stadium say, well, maybe one week a month or 1 week a season, we'll donate our money that we take to the poor and homeless around us, that we've made poor and homeless because we've made a stadium in this place. Anyway, yes, that is a good idea, Chris. And coming together for a group meditation. Imagine getting 6,000 people to be quiet and silent at one moment. It's hard enough getting a dozen. Hard enough getting three. Hard enough getting one. So, 8 minutes left on the show. And as I said, in just over an hour, we'll have Sam Muggsy. And I think she's speaking to Adronis again, which will be really good. And, coming up this week. Oh, come on, maybe if I get all zacked up and sing like a canary.
Sing like a boy.
So, we'll be looking at... I'm just trying to think of things that we're going to be looking at this year. Well, look, we're going to definitely be investigating this, this $1 trillion lawsuit. We're certainly going to be looking at the Turtle Island Renaissance, let's put it that way. This is, I think, a very, very exciting time to be in. And we're going to see some interesting things happening through the original nations, the First Nation people of the Great Turtle Island. Everything's going to turn around. It's going to be very, very interesting. Oh, my personal phone number is not working. My personal computer. But Muggsy doesn't broadcast from this studio, and she will be taking phone calls because that's a different situation. Yes, and thank you, K-Papa. You've answered that question. Oh, bless. Yes, sing like a canary. So, I wonder, maybe another tune. Have I missed anything? Are there any threads that I haven't tied up that people are going to... When's he going to get around to doing it? Just drop that in the chat room. Let's put another little tune in. Yes. This one, yes, I think this one. Here's one that adds some more mysteries to the Beatles.
I saw you.
So, Glass Onion. Yeah, you may have noticed these are not the regular mixes that that you've heard. These are more of the these are some of the early demos of this is how we think the song ought to go before they were taken into George Martin and polished with a fine English polish. Yeah, Von Helton. He's a great bloke. So yes, Quetzalcoatl, and suppose that where did you hear this information? Landing on Earth last night with Rep Study. What part of the Earth are they landing on? Hope they're not coming to Scotland. I don't fancy being somebody's Christmas dinner. I'm raw for a start. So it's been very good fun talking to everybody here tonight. It's a bit strange just talking out, you know, just having to keep words coming out of my mouth, no dead air and anything like that. It's much harder to do it when you're on your own. Much easier, even if there's somebody there who's not saying a word. It's much easier when you know that there's somebody there when you're having a dialogue. But thank you for exercising and helping me exercise my ability to monologue, even though it's not particularly smooth, and thank you for bearing with me. Maybe next week I'll speak about something that is... oh, there's Van Helden. Anyway, so, where's my little tunie? There it is. And so, thank you for attending tonight's meeting of Ever Beyond. And those of you listening to the podcast, check for the other shows that have already happened, presumably by the time you listen to this. So, it's the 25th of December 2011, and I bid you all a very good, happy, joyful, abundant, peaceful, wise, aware, awake New Year. Thank you and good night.